This morning, I want to talk about a passage that holds some special meaning to me. So, why don't you open your Bibles to Jeremiah chapter 28. So, while you're turning there, I'll give you a little backdrop of kind of where we're at, what's happening in the passage. Is that Jeremiah, who's a prophet of God, has been given a warning from the Lord, and the city Jerusalem is living. It's about to be overrun by the Babylonians. Jeremiah, the Lord tells him that there's nothing that they can do to prevent it. So it's going to happen. Pharaoh's army is there. And the reason that Babylonians haven't come in yet is because the army is there. But Pharaoh's going to pull his troops out, and then the Babylonians are going to come in. And so Jeremiah, at this time, he decides he's going to go to the region of Benjamin. And he's entitled to property there. So he says, I'm going to bail. I'm going to Benjamin. I'm going to go hang out there. And as he gets to the Benjamin gate, captain of the guard falsely accuses him of aligning himself with the Babylonians, and then has him arrested. And they put him in this makeshift jail. You know, they turned a guy's house into a jail, and he's stuck there. And he's stuck there for a long time. And after a long time passes, King Zedekiah calls him out and says, look, has God given you a word for us? And here he's put on the spot. He said, you know, this is a moment. You know, that he can do something. So what does he do? He's a prophet, right? He's a man of God. So he tells the king the pattern of the word that God has given. And then he says, you know, why have I been put in prison? And he kind of pleads his case, and he asks for mercy, and the king grants him freedom and says, you can now come live in the court. And so he's out of prison, he's living in this court with the king, and he goes about his life doing what prophets do, which is share the truth and get people worked up and stood up. So he's sharing the truth, he's sharing this word that God has given him, and the little inner circle of men around the king don't like this. So they hear what he's doing, and they accuse him, they go to the king and accuse him of stirring up panic and fear and people that are out, and they want him arrested. And so this is where we pick up our passage today. So it's in Jeremiah 38. We're going to begin in verse 4, and it's these officials who have gone to the king, and they say in verse 4, this man should be put to death. He's discouraging the soldiers who are left in the city, as well as the people, by the things he's saying to them. This man, not seeking the good of these people, but their good. He's in your hands, King Zedekiah, and the king will do nothing to oppose you. So they took Jeremiah, and they put him into a cistern, or of Malchiah, the king's son, which was in the courtyard of the guard. They lowered Jeremiah by ropes into the cistern, and it had no water in it, only mud, and Jeremiah sank down into the mud. But Abed-Melech, the Cushite, an official in the royal palace, heard that they had put Jeremiah into the cistern. While the king was sitting in the death room of Benjamin Gate, Abed-Melech went out to the palace and said to them, my lord the king, men have acted wickedly in all that they have done to Jeremiah the prophet. They have thrown him into a cistern where he will starve to death when there is no longer any bread in the city. Then the king commanded Abed-Melech, the Cushite, take 30 men from here with you and lift Jeremiah the prophet out of the cistern before he dies. So Abed-Melech took the men with him and went to a room under the treasury in the palace. He took some old rags and worn out clothes from there and left them down ropes to Jeremiah in the cistern. Abed-Melech the Cushite said to Jeremiah, put these old rags and worn out clothes under your arms to pad the ropes. Jeremiah did so, and they pulled him up with the ropes and lifted him out of the cistern, and Jeremiah remained in the courtyard of the guard. So here we find Jeremiah, you know, through no fault of his own, is thrown into this mud pit, into this cistern, this pit. And along comes this man, Abedmelech, who has compassion on him. And literally, he lifts this man of God out of the mire. And I love this story because I think there's times in every one of our lives where we need to be lifted up. We need to be pulled up out of the mire that we find ourselves in. We get discouraged, circumstances that go our way, life throws curves at us, whatever the case may be. And along comes this average person with an outstretched hand who lifts Jeremiah up, and that happens so many times in our lives. And today, you know, I want to encourage each one of us to kind of put ourselves in Abednego's shoes, if you will, or his sandals, and remember that we can lift somebody up. You know, we can be, we'll get there, but you know, we're going to be kind of like this guy. And what I like particularly about this passage is that the one that was needing to be lifted up was the man of God. So here we have the Lord's spokesman. Okay, you know, the job of a prophet was not necessarily the best job in the world, right? I mean, he was given words from God, and he had to go give them to the people, and most of the time, the people, you know, accepted them joyfully, followed willingly, and there was parties, and it was all blessings, right? No, never. I mean, rarely, you know, he was rarely accepted. But here we have the Lord's spokesman, the Lord's anointed one. We have the guy that God speaks. And it's this very thing that I want to address today. Like Jeremiah, this man of God, or the pastor even, if you will, can find himself shrinking in a mud pit of despair. Now, you'll rarely hear about it, you'll rarely see it, but as a former pastor myself, I can attest and I can tell you that it happens all the time. Discouragement can set in very quickly. And for pastors, there are many challenges and many mud pits, if you will, that they have to endure and have to work through. First, let's talk about a couple of these things. There's the cistern of the pastor's personal life. Okay? And again, I'm not picking on Steve over there. I'm speaking just as from my own experience as a pastor. For you see, the man of God, the pastor, is just like all of us. Flaws. One of the greatest things that I love about the Bible is that in every story of the mighty men of God, you know, you not only see their triumphs, their victories, their deeds, but you also see there's real struggles, their personal life. You see that these are just men like us. Think about it. Noah got drunk, found himself in a very odd situation with his sons covered up. Moses got angry. Samuel wouldn't correct his children. David committed adultery and murder. The man after God's own heart, right? Peter denied the Lord. Paul was tempted to be kind of elitist or proud. And yet, it's these flawed men who moved their generation for God. And it wasn't because of their personal flaws, really, it was in spite of them. And that's why, you know, I think it's why God chooses to be kind, because you see these mighty things happening despite their flaws, despite their humanity, and then that God goes to God. We have to understand that the pastor, the man of God, has his own inner struggles, his own flesh, his own discouragements, his disappointments that he's got to deal with, and in many times he finds himself in this system that he's still in. See, not only does he have his personal struggles, but this is a big one too. Is there's often this pit of the extra strain from marriage. Being a pastor is like if you drive a truck, you know, normally your spouse isn't there when you're driving, or if you deliver the mail, your spouse isn't there handling the letters and you're putting them in the box. If you sell cars, probably you know what, not so with the pastor. His spouse plays a vital and important role. Most of the time, she's expected to be there with events and things just as much as not more. On top of their own job, on top of the kids, their responsibilities. Oftentimes, she's found behind the scenes holding everything together while the pastor's on the instrument with someone else. And it's really a tireless thing. The supporter, and you know, she does this to her husband oftentimes while she's in the first class. It happens. It's just sometimes it's inevitable when you're sitting down with a family thing, you're sitting down getting ready to do something, maybe you're getting ready to go on a date, and you're going to have to call. And then the pastor's stuck with the decision of, uh-oh, what do I do with this? I really need to go with this situation, but then I look at my wife, she's waiting, she really had no time. And then you're stuck in the middle of, wow, somebody's going to love you. Well, I have to sleep with her, so maybe I better make sure it's sort of like, you know, like a dog. Oftentimes, like, that it can be a very difficult thing to do. Without a doubt, it can take its toll. So not only do you have this method, but the personal struggles, the toll of the family. Thirdly, there's this much of disappointment. The pastor is investing his life into the lives of everybody. It's so, you know, appropriate after talking about investment. The little Bible study, here you see all these things that are going on. And the pastor's pointing to investing in people's lives. The many hours of counseling, the 3 o'clock in the morning phone calls, the quick runs to the hospital. I look back and think, wow, I did that for 12 years. How in the world did I see, you know, since I haven't been pastoring in June, it's been really nice in a sense because I actually had a weekend to myself. I've never had it for 12 years. And I look back and think, how did I do that every single week? And now, on top of everything we've done, you have this investment in preparing messages, and then you come and you're ready, and a very small crowd shows up. Or, you know, something happens, or you tell someone you invest and you give someone some really good advice, and they turn around and do something opposite. You just kind of breaks your heart to see that sometimes things don't necessarily happen the way, you know, attendance drops, seasons come, good, you know, members that your dear friends would move out of state and move away. I mean, we've all seen these things happen, and it can be such a discouragement. What am I doing? Why am I doing these things? You know, help me do it. You know, so that the pastor today really can struggle with those things. And what I see comfort in that is that it's not just a today's pastor, but yet we see Paul. The Apostle Paul struggled with this very same thing. In 2 Timothy 4:9 and 10, he writes, he's writing and he says, do your best to come to me quickly for Demas, because he loved this world, has deserted me. You know, Demas, this guy that I've invested in, that I've put in all this effort in, he's beyond the world. And he wanted the world more than he wanted to do this, and he lost it. Heartbroken. You know, Paul was discouraged when Demas chose the world over discipleship. So sometimes slow results, you know, can cause that man of God to seem to be a bit of, you know, discouragement. So we see personal struggles, strain on his marriage, disappointing results, and then the last one, which I think is sometimes even hardest to me, is there's often this much better of opposition of people, you know, the opposing people. And Paul gives us this reference, and it says in 2 Timothy 4:14, Alexander the metalworker did me a great deal of honor. The Lord will repay me for what he has done, and you too should be on your guard. who loves to be diaphanous. I wrote to the church that diaphanous who love to be first will have nothing to do with this. So if I come, I will call attention to those who gossiping maliciously about us, not satisfied with that. He refuses to welcome brothers. He also stops those who want to do so and puts them out of the church. So you can see that sometimes the pastors that deal, you know what, guys, there's some things you never see that the pastor sees. It always comes back to that. And Henry has said that. That things always kind of trickle back and come to the pastor. You know, and then he deals with sometimes these people that are very, very difficult. And all of these situations can be really traced back to the pastor. It's just the first lesson. Certainly I, Paul, did again and again, but Satan stopped us. So not only do we have like our personal lives, marriage strains, we've got opposing people, or, you know, disappointing results, whatever, we've got the enemy that's constantly on top of the pastor. Constantly. And if we look at our passage today, who had Jeremiah shut up and killed him? I mean, why? Because it was the enemy. We can read in Zechariah 13, 7. Strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered. So if the enemy can take him out, what's going to happen to the sheep? You've got a shepherd who's there to protect him. I mean, we would love to encourage you guys sometime to do a study on the role of a shepherd back in these biblical times and how the shepherd cares for the flock. It's a beautiful example of God's given us in that shepherd role. But this morning, I wanted to point out some of these things that can happen to your pastor, to the man of God. Just like Jeremiah found himself in the pit, sometimes your pastor can find himself in the pit. And this morning, if you look at our text, it says that Jeremiah put these ropes underneath his arms, and he was given some old rags and old clothes to line the ropes with so he could put them under there, and they pulled him up. And this morning, I want to encourage you that I want you to be like a bedline. Okay, to lift up this man. Lift up your pastor. How do we do that? How do we lift up your pastor? How do we put these ropes out and lift up his arms? Well, there's two ropes that I can suggest. You can stick with the text, there are two ropes, and there are two ways that you can encourage your pastor. You can lift him up. The first is the rope of encouragement, if you will. Pastors in their lives, they need extra encouragement. You can never encourage Stephen Hillary. You can't. You never have to worry about whether they're going to be puffed up, or they're going to become proud, or they're going to get dickheads because you lift them up. I really had somebody say, you know, I wanted to share encouragement, but I was just really afraid that they'd get mild, and I'd be like, not against you. And I said, you know, you never have to worry about them getting puffed up, because whatever encouraging words they're going to deal with, and other words in this room, they're always going to deal with those opposing people and all these other issues that are going to be. It always happens when people come in. But the first thing that we can do is, you know, offer a friendly word or encouraging word, a nice card, a small gift, something that you can do to express your appreciation for the investment that they make. That makes a huge difference. Somebody serving someone's doing just a simple way recognizing their heart for their flock, for their people, and I think not only is saying something, but coming alongside them and helping to carry the burden, carry the responsibility, speaks volumes. There's a principle among churches that there's a 90% over 90. You know, 10% of the people are 90% of the world. And that's really true. I have been fortunate at this point to be able to travel and visit a lot of different churches and see that it doesn't matter. I was joking with a very good friend of mine who's got a church of 4,500 people, and there are just hundreds of volunteers. And he would say, man, you know, we just don't have volunteers, we have this, we have that. I said, 450 volunteers? Are you nuts? And he goes, there's 4,500 people. He goes, it's all relative. This 90-10, you need to be admonition to exhort, or to lift up, or to encourage one another. And then I should be reminded this point of my life, you know, getting into those things. You know, you can talk about all these guys involved, all alone, having been shipwrecked, stoned, beaten, you know, all these things. There should be one of them, there should be that disclosure. But there was that one young man who just came along at the right moment and lifted him up. Second way is to encourage and go alongside and support. The second way is this local prayer. This is huge. If you want to look at the pastor, we have this really beautiful picture from the other story that's in Exodus 17. And I think most of you know the story of Moses. He's standing up on a hill and he's got the staff of God raised. And who's down fighting? Joshua's down fighting against the And as long as Moses is standing up there, I mean, picture this guy. He's a massive battle. He's on this hill overlooking, and he's standing there holding this. I mean, yeah, we could do this for how long? 10 minutes? Maybe somebody who's slowly talks with people here for an hour, an hour, I don't know. But eventually, your arms are going to get really tired, and they're going to come down. And we see in the story that as Moses starts to get tired, I'm sure he's like, hurry up! You know, he's holding it. He starts to get tired, the staff lowers, and then Joshua starts to lose the battle. And then me, in my weird sense of thinking, I'm like, oh, what is up with that? I mean, why do you do that? Why? What's happening there? But I think what God has done is show us this picture that here we have Aaron and Hur, you know, the sidekicks, they come in and see, oh my gosh, he's struggling. We've got to help him. We've got to come alongside and lift up his arms. So each one of them, they get a rock, they sit him down on the rock, and each one takes an arm and they hold it. I mean, talk about a beautiful picture of support. And I think God allowed that to happen to show us they were never designed to do this for him. They were not designed to do this forever. Never. They need us to come along and pick up that arm and say, how can I help you? What can I do? I'm going to support you with this. And so, we're given this beautiful picture, and we see they hold up his arms, and then Joshua wins the battle. They win the battle, and I'm sure he's finding himself, oh, it's about time, thank you guys, this is wonderful, and they go and they celebrate. Steve and Lori, they need this completely. They face battles that we don't. Remember, strike the shepherd, and the sheep will, you know, will scatter. There's this huge target on their back that the enemy is constantly doing. And if we can get them to quit, we can get them to step in, we can get them out of the way, and then we're going to scatter. And so we need to pray for them every day. We're fighting a battle that most of us don't understand. A battle that most of us don't even really know what's going on. I sit here today and I'm going to talk about how we share this with corporate partners. We have a report to share. That's a pretty cool statement to make. He had a report to share on everybody. Well, how does he have any kind of a report to share? Because he's invested in care, he knows, he cares, he's involved, and he can share a story. That's a big deal. He's fighting the battle. He was up in the battle in 7 days, praying just for this little church. He is this shepherd role that God has given him. So, man, he is just got a huge part of that. We need to come alongside them and lift them up and we need to pray for them. And in closing, I'll give you one more thought that in the Jeremiah, again, he was given these rags to hold to his arms and this rope to lift him up. And what I love about this is he was doing that for one second. I mean, we really don't do much about them. We don't do much about this guy, but he was just a simple guy that comes along out of the blue and intercedes and intervenes. A simple man, ordinary like me, and I've talked to so many you are important. In Matthew 10, verse 41, he who receives you receives me. He who receives me receives me. Anyone who receives a prophet because he is a prophet will receive a prophet from the Lord. And anyone who receives a righteous man because he's a righteous man will receive a righteous man's reward. And if anyone gives him a cup of water to one of these little ones because he's not a disciple, I tell you the truth, he will certainly not lose his reward. A simple man, any of us, if any of us receive, any of us support, any of us go and do these things in the name of the Lord, will receive our reward. That's a great thing. It's a great encouragement for you to be that man, to be that person who says, you know, I haven't seen this person, I haven't seen that person. Maybe I'm not seeing it, but they're looking at it. How can I look them up? You know, Abednego, he didn't prophesy. He didn't raise the dead. He didn't heal the sick. You know, he didn't write part of the Bible. But check it out. He did this simple task, and here we are, how many thousands of years later, talking about it. His name is written in the Word of God, and he's remembered. That's crazy. How many of our names were written in the repository that's been written about 2,000 years ago? You know what I mean? That's pretty good humor. So one simple thing in your life causes him to remember the work of the Lord. I love how God's answer gives us this simple things. Purpose, great purposes. So this morning, we want to do that very thing. We want to be presentable. We want to embarrass you. Okay? And I love this because I get to do this. But this morning we want to acknowledge, you know, it's Purge Appreciation Month. It's the last Sunday, so we just looked up there. But we want to acknowledge how much we appreciate everything you guys do, the battles that you fight, the discouragements that you face, you know, all of the things that go on. We as a body want to ask you to come up, and I want you guys to all come up and we're going to just lay things on you guys and we're going to pray for you. Would you guys come up and we'll close in prayer together? So why don't you guys come up as just a family? I'm so excited that we are a family here and we can do this and we can show our love.